Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week coming up for the end of the hour. Dr. Robin Chutkan is a gastroenterologist. She's the founder of the Digestive Center for Women, and her book is out called Gut Bliss. Gut Bliss, yes, it's a 10-day plan to ban bloat, flush toxins, and dump your digestive baggage, as published by Avery Books. Doc, thanks for coming on. We don't want the guys to turn off on this segment. Any information for the fellas listening today on the show?
There's actually lots of great information in here for men, too. Now, there are a couple causes of bloating that are equal opportunity employers, and those are things like the food that you eat and some gastrointestinal conditions like diverticulosis, gallbladder problems. But there are also a couple causes of bloating that are really unique to women, and one of them is the fact that women have longer colons than men.
But you do see guys in your office, right?
Oh, I absolutely do. About 20% of the patients I see are men.
Okay, so there's some information for the fellows to stick around for. Here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
Now, how long is the average intestine and colon, Robin?
So the average colon is somewhere between 4 and 6 feet. Of course, the digestive tract is a lot longer than that. It's about 30 feet from the mouth all the way down to the anus. But women on average have an extra 4 to 5 inches, and this extra length means lots more twists and turns, what we've called in the past a redundant colon. I prefer to call it a voluptuous colon. So this means that women tend to be much more bloated, much more constipated, just have a much more difficult time eliminating gas and the products of digestion.
Even though it's only 4 inches out of 23 feet.
Because it's it's 4 inches out of 4 feet, because it's really the extra length is the colon. But it's not just the length, it's the fact that in women, we have a wider pelvis. So most of our colon falls down in the pelvis, and it has to compete for space with the reproductive organs, with the uterus and the fallopian tubes and the ovaries. Men have a more narrow android pelvis, and so most of their colon is up in the abdomen, so there's lots more room. And it's why colonoscopy takes so much longer in women, and typically why they require more sedation.
Now, I wanted to get to how to identify the cause of what you call bacterial imbalance. And by the way, we should say that people can find a lot more information at www.gutbliss, GUTBLISS, which is the name of the book, .com, Gutbliss. So tell us about, give us more information, if you will, on how to identify the cause of bacterial imbalance or dysbiosis.
So what we're finding out is that things that you can't see in the GI tract, like the microscopic bacteria there, may actually be more important than the things you can. There are more bacteria in your colon than there are cells in your entire body. And although we can't see them, if we scraped them all up, they'd weigh about 3 to 4 pounds. And most of us, when things are in balance, have a ratio that's roughly 80% good to 20% bad.
So that is of the bacteria.
Of the bacteria.
80% of them are what you would call beneficial or innocuous, and 20% of them are potentially dangerous?
Potentially problematic. That's absolutely right. And what happens is that with the widespread use of antibiotics, so when you take an antibiotic for sinus infection or a bladder infection, it kills off some of the problematic bacteria, but it also kills off lots of the good bacteria in droves. And so your good gut bacteria, if you will, end up taking a hit. And if you're somebody who's been on antibiotics repeatedly, or some people are on them chronically for things like Lyme disease or skin problems, you can really end up with a depleted gut bacteria. There are other things that can affect your gut bacteria, too. It's not just antibiotics. The food you eat is a huge determinant of what kind of gut bacteria you have. So what we're finding is that a Western diet that's higher in sugar and fat and lower in plants ends up causing this sort of imbalance. So we have bacterial species that are more associated with autoimmune disease and obesity compared to people in, say, sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia who eat a more plant-based diet and don't use as many medications.
And now, how does one identify whether that's the cause of a problem or whether it is something else, such as, if you will, a food intolerance of some other kind? In other words, how does one say, this is really due to the bacteria in my gut and my changing those bacteria with my food, versus this is really due to just my intolerance to this food, or, if you will, redundant colon or whatever else possibility?
It's a terrific and really important question. And dysbiosis is something that we don't have a sort of yes or no 100% accurate test. There are some tests that we do, breath tests for bacterial overgrowth, when we're looking for something called SIBO, S-I-B-O, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which means more bacteria up in the small intestine as opposed to down in the colon. So these breath tests we can do, what we're doing is we're detecting the levels of hydrogen and methane produced by these bacteria after we give the patient something to eat. But they're not perfect tests by any stretch of the imagination. They tend to not be that accurate, so you have to be a bit of a medical detective. So the first thing you do is you take a good history, and you find out, you know, has this person been on a lot of antibiotics? What have they been eating? And then you ask them about signs and symptoms. And what's interesting, particularly in women, is that they often will give a history of frequent vaginal yeast infection. Sometimes on the physical exam, you'll look under their arm, and you can see yeast proliferating onto the arm or in the groin area. Sometimes they have thrush in their mouth, which is a proliferation of yeast. So often there are clues, fungal infections in the nails. There are often clues on the physical exam, in addition to their complaints of bloating and not feeling well, that really tip you off. So it's really the combination. It's sort of the good old way to make a diagnosis in medicine. It's the history, the physical exam, as well as the complaints they tell you, and plus minus a breath test. Sometimes that's helpful.
If they haven't had antibiotics, are there enough antibiotics in the foods we eat to cause the same problem, or is it much more common in people who formerly had an antibiotic?
Well, it's a fascinating area, this idea of how we're getting antibiotics. And the New York Times published an article a couple years ago that reported an astounding 80% of all antibiotics sold in the U.S. are sold for animal consumption, for this sort of industrial agricultural production of animal products. And so that's quite shocking, that 80% of the antibiotics being distributed are being used for animals. Most of the patients I see, even the ones who are eating a lot of animal products, really have a history of additional antibiotic use. So even though cumulatively we worry, and I think folks like myself who are over 40 who were eating a lot of meat before they started using antibiotics in the meat are a little bit protected, but I have an 8-year-old and I worry about her, because I think unless you sort of, you know, have an animal pulled up in your backyard, you're not ever completely sure. So, you know, it will be interesting to see with this younger generation 40, 50 years down the road after all this antibiotic use and the food that they're eating, what's going to happen. But for right now, most of the adults I see with dysbiosis have a clear history of additional antibiotic use or steroids. That's another huge one that can shift the
now,
bacterial
Connie,
balance.
Connie asked us on the email line, and Joe will give you the email line, but Connie asked us on the email line, how long after I change my diet should I see a change in my bloating?
So I think 6 weeks is a reasonable period of time if you are dealing with dysbiosis. It takes a lot longer than if you're just dealing with a food intolerance. And I recommend a sort of three-pronged approach. The first is to stop the offending agent, stop the antibiotics, stop the steroids, stop, you know, whatever it is that's contributing. The second is to change the diet and eat lots of leafy greens and sort of high-fiber fruits and vegetables, particularly vegetables, things like artichokes and asparagus, things that produce a sort of fiber that bacteria like and that help to grow your good bacteria, essentially. You have a little zoo in there. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is to eliminate some of the things that we know tend to favor the not-so-beneficial species, so all the sugary, starchy stuff.
And when you do that, so it takes a little while to do that, Robin, right? And when you do that, it's 6 weeks after you've completed that you'll notice a change. And we'll take that question when we come back. Joe?
Thank you, Dr. Mike. udocs@gmail.com. udocs@gmail.com is the email address. Robin Chutkan, author of Gut Bliss, a 10-day plan to ban bloat, flush toxins, and dump your digestive baggage. You, the Owner's Manual radio show on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And we're talking... I'm sorry, Dr.
I am sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say Dr. Robin Chutkan is here. She's the author of Gut Bliss, a 10-day plan to ban bloat, flush toxins, and dump your digestive baggage. Now, you may have it back with a good doctor.
And we were talking, can you do the, and this relates to the question that Connie asked us, can you do the 10-day plan, and then it takes how long to feel a lot better after you've done the 10-day bloat plan and change the food or elimination diet? How long after that will you have better bacteria in your gut?
Well, so there's sort of two things here. The 10-day plan, and I want to stress this really isn't a diet book. It's sort of a primer on your digestive system and the causes of bloating and what can go wrong. But the plan at the end of the book suggests that you eliminate the six things that seem to be the prime culprits for most people with bloating. And it spells SAD gas. That's soy, artificial sweeteners, and dairy. That's the SAD part. The gas part is gluten, alcohol, and sugar. So these fall into sort of more the food intolerances we were talking about earlier. And for most people, definitely within that 10-day period, they'll notice a difference. And then the idea is if you really miss something, say you decide you really miss your Greek yogurt, you reintroduce that, you sort of reintroduce one thing a week and see what happens with your bloating. If the minute you start having your yogurt, you're super bloated again, then that might be the thing for you to really cut back on. Or if you eliminate wheat and you feel better, but then when you reintroduce it, you still feel fine, then that's probably not the problem. So the food intolerance elimination diet, as you accurately described it, is about 10 days. But the dysbiosis, I've had people tell me that within 3 or 4 days, when they, they sort of work on correcting the bacterial overgrowth, they feel better. But in general, that's a longer process, and that's about 6 weeks for people to sort of really get their gut bacteria back to the right place. Sometimes faster if you're using a heavy dose of a probiotic.
Jeff, we have a question from a guy, and I know 10% of your patients, even though your center is a center for women, that 10% of the patients are guys. And so we'll take this one from Jeff B. Jeff B. asks, and I'm paraphrasing here, if you will, and he's saying, what's your take, meaning yours, Robin? And Robin is the author of Gut Bliss, and the website is GUTBLISSSS.com. What's your take on DHA and omega-3s, 7s, and 9s?
So, Jeff, I think, first of all, thank you for calling in, because I do love my male patients just as much as I love my female patients. If you are a vegan and you don't eat fish, I think that is a good idea. Or if you don't have access to good quality wild salmon or flaxseed, things like that. But I'm a huge fan of getting these nutrients from food rather than from a supplement. So if you, you know, if you're really concerned about your diet and you don't think you're getting them in, it's not a bad idea. But I think it's a much better idea to eat a little wild salmon a couple times a week, and or use things like flaxseed oil to get the omega-3 fatty acids. Because part of the problem is when we do a study and we find, for example, that, oh, tomato has lycopene in it, and lycopene seems to be good for the heart because people who eat lots of tomatoes are heart healthy, then we extract the lycopene and give it as a supplement. We really don't know what other, you know, possibly 100 or 1,000 other substances in that tomato are contributing to a healthy heart. And so extracting this nutrient one at a time and suggesting that, you know, this particular thing has some magical powers, I'm always a little concerned that we're perhaps missing the extracted.
And what about the omega-9? You didn't comment on that, which is, and just to make sure Jeff's happy, the olive oil, and he said it is extra virgin, especially good for your gut bacteria.
So extra virgin is great, and I'm glad you mentioned that. The problem is we're finding now that a lot of the extra virgin olive oil we're using in the U.S. is not that good because it's too old, so it's lost its sort of health benefits. It's not a pure enough source. Olive oil is really olive juice, and so really we should be thinking about using an olive oil that has an expiration date. And as they're doing more testing now on the brands in the U.S., they're finding that a lot of them really don't live up to the health benefits just because they're too old. So I think a nice fresh olive oil with an expiration date is a great idea, something great to add in here, and that's typically what I cook with.
Bridget?
I have a question about yoga, because you mentioned in the book that you're a yogi and that there's a lot of benefits to your digestive problems, and I was wondering if you could just go over a few of them.
Sure. So, you know, any sort of exercise I think is great because intestinal tract is a long muscular structure. So as I'm fond of saying, if you're not moving, neither are your bowels or your products of digestion. But yoga can be particularly helpful for the bloated person because a lot of the twisting poses, like prayer pose and other poses like that, twisting asanas, really can help to move things through, and they can help to sort of squeeze out some of these pockets of gas. In the colon, gas tends to accumulate on the left side and the right side. The left side by the splenic flexure, where the colon makes a right angle around the spleen, and on the right side of the hepatic flexure, where it does the same thing around the liver. And that's often where gas gets trapped. So these twisting poses can help to sort of wring out some of this gas and stimulate peristalsis. And then, of course, there's just the endorphin release. So it's sort of a win-win-win.
That's awesome. I've heard that a lot in yoga classes, but I wasn't sure of the validity about that from the yoga teachers. So then when I saw that in the book, and then running, you said, is also really good, right?
Running is great and easy to do. I went on a nice long run this morning here in San Diego, where I happened to be this weekend, and I just felt great after. Decided to skip the medical meeting and go for a run instead.
We've been talking with Robin Chaykin, author of Gut Bliss, www.gutbliss.com. We're now going to go to the Real Age Tip of the Week. And this is an easy and in and a unusual tip, if you will. Nobody wants to get type 2 diabetes the way nobody wants to get rear-ended on the road. But now there's another alert that's been added to the long list of problems that comes with type 2 diabetes that most people are probably not aware of. That is iffy bones. Yep, if you have type 2 diabetes, you could already need bone strengthening medications or exercises. What to do? Be proactive by asking your doc about the new FRAX diabetes study and whether you need to do muscle building exercises, or even consider other medications. Second, because type 2 diabetes can be reversed with exercise and food choices, you need to get in gear with a lifestyle program that helps you reverse your type 2 diabetes. The real age benefit of managing type 2 diabetes so you don't have an abnormal hemoglobin A1C, a half year younger for every year you manage it. And that's the real age tip of the week, Joe.
Okay, Dr. Mike, keep the emails coming. udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. Listen to us too on iHeartRadio Talk. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Royson on Radio MD. Thanks for listening and stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamin C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase two bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a third bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800, or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive three bottles of Nighttime for the price of two.
You may already take omega-3s for heart and brain health, but what most people don't realize is that DHA is really the preferred form. Did you know if you take omega-3s, but your body cannot convert them into the preferred DHA form, you won't get much benefit? The ultimate DHA omega-3 would be water-soluble, so it's already in the right form for digestion. That's a game-changer. It would eliminate the fish burps, be good-tasting, and all-natural. It would be environmentally sustainable from algae oil, plus non-GMO and allergen-free. Well, I have some good news for you. Empirical Labs already invented this. And better yet, you can get a bottle right now for 50% off with a special offer at TakeOmega.com. This is the only water-soluble DHA supplement, plus it's vegan. So go to TakeOmega.com right now for a limited time savings, 50% off at TakeOmega.com. That's O-M-E-G-A. TakeOmega.com.